Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Our next guest is the athletic director at the University of Portland, Scott Lakem. He's got a dog in the fight tonight as Boston is taking on Miami in Game 2 of the Eastern Conference Finals. Eric Spoelstra, University of Portland graduate. Are you guys celebrating Spo?
We are. We actually have dogs on both benches, John. We have Spo, and then we have Ben Sullivan, who played for us recently on the Celtics staff. So this is a fun one for us both ways.
That's great. It's this time of year where we will say things to ADs like, hey, there's not a lot going on, but that's not really true, is it? Like, we don't see games, we don't see basketball or football, and there is a lot going on. There's a lot going on in sports. I just want to check in with you and just kind of see, like, you know, what you make right now of, you know, what's top of mind? What's on your plate as an athletic director at UP?
A couple of things. One is finishing up the spring. Right? I mean, a lot of us are ready for vacation, I think, as we all are, and sunshine. So we have a baseball team having maybe its best year ever that's in second place in the WCC, and a track team that just qualified 10 kids for the NCAA championship. So we're celebrating them till the end, but also starting to plan for what soccer and basketball look like in the fall. So a little bit of both.
Basketball, I thought you guys had a really nice season. Shante Leggins, your men's coach, had a great start, I think. It's real promising, and I think there's a lot to sell there. And then on the women's side, you know, you guys have, I thought, just been a really nice, solid program that, you know, made an NCAA tournament. Michael Meek's done a really nice job. You know, what went into getting those two programs in the shape that they are right now?
A lot of it's the leadership, right? I mean, Coach Meek, he won at Southridge. He won at George Fox. He's won with us. I mean, he's made the postseason all 3 years. We won 20 games in a tough league. And the guy's won 85-90% of his games as a head coach. So that's, I mean, no matter what the level, he's been successful. And I think with Shante, I mean, we went from 6 wins to 19, which is a pretty colossal jump in our business. And the crazy thing, he did it. We didn't have one scholarship player back from last year. Not one. And that's, you could say a lot of bad things about the transfer portal. You can also say it. You can build things really quickly in a way you couldn't have 5 or 10 years ago.
Yeah, and I think, too, on the men's side, you know, you talk about Shante and you look at the success you guys had late in the year. I mean, there were probably some points of the season where people didn't get it, but I think we really started to see it down the stretch, and the team played well.
Yeah, and you and I have talked about it. I think, you know, moving up the food chain in the WCC is a process, right? I mean, we obviously have a team from Spokane that's really good, and you've got St. Mary's and BYU. I mean, when Shante and I sat down, is how do we get to the middle of the pack this year and to sweep San Diego and to sweep Pepperdine and to sweep Pacific? I mean, that's where we want to be in kind of that growing process. And next year will be tough with the PK85, and we're going to go down to Eugene and play Oregon again. We may have the same amount of wins with a tougher schedule, but we were fortunate. Our women's team, John, we have 4 of our 5 starters back. Our men, we have all 5 starters back, which is rare in this day and age, so we feel good about where we're headed.
You know, we're watching the football coaches, Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban, you know, fight, and it's interesting to me because I look at those two programs and I go, gosh, those guys are on the same team, right? They're winning big. They're at places that have huge advantages. The NCAA is under a lot of change right now and a lot of pressure. What are you seeing at your level in the WCC?
Oh, John, I'm on Team Popcorn. I want to go to that real quick.
Yeah, right.
I'm on Team Popcorn. I mean, it's fascinating because this business used to be the haves versus the have-nots, right? And now it's the haves versus the haves. So grab your popcorn and grab your junior mints and watch them fight it out. I think for us, it's a couple of things. One is if you have good coaches and good cultures, you'll be able to hang on to your kids and you'll be able to build something. I mean, we're not going to beat Alabama head-to-head for basketball recruits. Well, you know, we're not going to beat Stanford head-to-head for basketball recruits out of high school. But we've got to find kids that fit us and develop them. But I think one thing that's happened with the transfer portal that I think is going to be one danger of this NIL thing for the Power Fives is you have kids that the Power Fives, I feel like, give up on kids a little earlier now, and I think that's going to be more so with NIL. But you can get a kid that, you know, didn't fit at, you know, Oregon or Oregon State or Washington State that comes here and has, you know, a revival. I mean, we had a women's basketball center this year who led the nation in block shots, who played for Kelly Graves 2 years ago. So is it hard? Yes. Do we have the money that the other schools do? No, we never have. But we do have the chance to compete. I mean, I think the two things, John, that keep us up at night with the NCAA rules piece is, you know, the scholarship limits keep it whole, right? I mean, the fact that we all have 13 men's basketball scholarships, if they make that 20, or if they expand baseball from 11 scholarships to 20, then it's going to be harder for some of us to compete, right? Or if they say, hey, not every conference has the same access to an NCAA championship, that makes it hard. But the other stuff, I mean, we're used to the fact that some schools have $500 million budgets and some have $15 million budgets. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, and I think it's always, I talked to a Power Five conference football coach today who said, look, there's never been parity. Like, you know, Washington State is not the same as Alabama. Oregon State's not the same as, you know, Texas A&M. But they play under the same rules. What do you think is going to happen with the NCAA, and where does the WCC fit into a restructured NCAA if it comes to that?
John, I wish I had a crystal ball on that. It's going to be really interesting what the minimum standards look like from the Division I Transformation Committee this summer. I think there's some pieces of it that are going to be really good, right? Requiring schools hopefully to have minimum athletic trainer requirements and minimum mental health service requirements and minimum investment in scholarships. Where it goes beyond that, I don't know. I mean, I've always been a fan of, hey, if Alabama wants to spend a little more money, they should be able to do that. I mean, through all this lack of parity, which you're right about, we've still maintained our status as a top eight, top nine basketball conference in the country, and I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Yeah, and I think, too, you know, you look at your conference, you got some programs in there that played into the NCAA tournament, had high expectations. How do you think the WCC, you know, I've asked this question of Gloria Navarez, your conference commissioner, but, you know, you got Gonzaga that is a national brand, but the job of the conference isn't really to serve Gonzaga, yet at the same time promoting Gonzaga and putting them in position to succeed benefits the conference. How does that weigh when you guys have discussions about the attention, the promotion, television, basketball and television and all that when it comes to Gonzaga being involved?
Well, I think most of us respect and admire and want to achieve success on some modicum of level that Gonzaga has, right? When you talk about parity, yes, they've still been the number one basketball team in the country with less resources than a lot of the teams they're playing against. Gloria's got a tough job. When I worked at the WCC, it was a tough job. There is a balance. I mean, we've had to do some things like change the conference schedule to help Gonzaga and St. Mary's out. And, John, it has helped. I mean, we had three teams in the NCAA tournament this year, and we had a couple in the NIT. I think we've made some things that have done some things that have helped all parties. And I'll be honest, that unbalanced schedule helped us too. I mean, we only had to play Gonzaga and St. Mary's once in league and got to play the other teams in the middle like us. So there's a balance. I think we all respect Gonzaga. They've been in this league a long time, but I think Gonzaga also respects and wants us to be better too, right? It helps Gonzaga if our RPI is 100. It doesn't help Gonzaga if our RPI is 300. I mean, it benefits them if everybody else is getting better, too.
Scott Lakem, our guest, University of Portland's athletic director. When are you having the most fun on the job?
I think it happened a couple weeks ago at graduation. I mean, that's one of the days that's the most fun for me, right? Especially after COVID, when we see we had 66 kids walk across the stage,
yeah.
Right? Some were transfers, some are grad transfers, some kids that have been with us for 4 or 5 years. But to see the kids complete the journey successfully is fun. Winning is fun, too. I mean, we've had, you and I talked about basketball. We had a great year with baseball. Men's soccer went deep in the NCAA tournament. We've had 10 of our 16 teams make the postseason. That's fun, and you enjoy that. But at the end of the game at our level, I think it's really about getting kids across the stage and developing the whole person. Our graduation rate in the next cohort is going to be 98%. I mean, I like winning, but I like those other pieces a whole lot, too.
Prior to coming to UP, you had, you know, a variety of stops. One of them was at Stanford. You were there in the early part of your career in media relations. You were with the football program. You saw a Rose Bowl, among other things. What was that experience like for you?
We had a really cool year, John. I think we were in the Rose Bowl, the Final Four, and the College World Series in 12 months. That was an amazing place where you're walking around and, hey, there's Tiger Woods, and, you know, hey, there's Summer Sanders, and, hey, there's Chelsea Clinton. And it's an amazing place and amazing facilities. The thing I appreciated about Stanford is Stanford never was really playing the arms race. Stanford, I think, has always tried to be Stanford, right? And I think you had a good point earlier in the show when you talked about where does, you know, Northwestern and Vanderbilt, Stanford, and some of the schools fit in this arms race piece. But the thing I always admired about Stanford is Stanford's very comfortable in its own skin.
Yeah, and I think, too, it's a different animal. I mean, with the endowment and the support there. But what did you learn there at Stanford, maybe in the athletic department or just being around it, that you still carry with you at UP?
Collaboration. I mean, we had two amazing athletic directors that I worked for. One, Bob Boltby, who's winding up at the Big 12, and one is Ted Leland, was really collaboration and getting people to work together. But the thing that I think I'm most proud of is Ted and Bob were so selfless, and they didn't only want us to do good work for Stanford, but they wanted to develop us to get us to the athletic director chair. Or get us to the next stop. I mean, there was a point where I think there were four people from the development office I worked in Stanford, and there were eight of us that were all Division I ADs at the same time. They did a really good job at, you know, grooming us for the next level, and sometimes it made us uncomfortable. I mean, I was a PR director at 28 or 29, and that was hard, and my eyes were big, but I think sometimes you get better by being uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's hard, too, because I get the impression today, and it's not just your athletic department, but across the country, certainly across the Pac-12, you know, everybody's scrambling. Everybody, you know, kind of came out of the pandemic with, you know, a hole in their budget, and they're trying to do more with less. And can you simultaneously develop people on your staff while also saying, hey, I need everything you can get, I can get from you right now because you know, we need to get to tomorrow?
It's hard. I'll be real honest. That's a great question, John. It's hard. I think one thing that made us better in the pandemic and made me better personally is in this business, and you know, it's the work 7 days a week, right? We work Monday to Friday, and then we're working games Saturday and Sunday. What we've done in our climate and our culture with our staff and our coaches this year is, hey, if you're here all weekend working baseball or soccer or volleyball or tennis, take Monday off. Take Wednesday off. Go grocery shopping. Pick up your kids from school. Trying to get us back to kind of that 5 day a week because you can't afford to run people into the ground, especially now.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. You got to pace, and we don't think about it. I don't think regular people in general, civilians, think about pacing as much as athletes do, but I think we could learn a lot from them. Scott Lakem is with us, University of Portland AD. Give me a book that you've read that, you know, you would give as a gift to someone else. We're headed towards Father's Day in June. You know, I always ask people, you know, about books that they've read that kind of stay with you. What comes to mind, Scott Lakem, when I say that?
I am a big John Feinstein guy. Anything from John Feinstein. A Good Walk Spoiled is a book that my late dad gave me. That's one of my favorites. I love John's book on the Patriot League, Season on the Brink. But anything that John wrote, I will read sometimes multiple times.
I love that. Yeah, I was going off to cover Indiana basketball in 1998, and I read Feinstein's Season on the Brink while I was on the plane headed out there. I was terrified by the time I landed. What was I getting myself into? I remember that distinctly. Scott Lakem with us. All right, expectations for your basketball programs. You don't have a football program. When we talk about revenue generating and basketball, how much more challenging does that make your job, and what are the expectations you have for those two programs?
I think there's a pluses and minuses there. I think, like, comparing us to Portland State, I think it helps our basketball programs that they don't have to share resources with a football program, right? Mm. And I'm not just saying money. I'm saying training room, weight room, academic support. To not have to share with football, I think, is a plus. I mean, our goal, I think we're going to revisit our goal a little bit, but our goal has been in every sport to compete to get into the postseason. I think our goal with our women's basketball team this year and beyond now is to make the NCAA tournament. I think we're right on the cusp of that and have scheduled this year. We're going to play Florida. We're going to play Oregon. We're bringing Stanford to the Child Center. It's time to step up the level of competition a little bit and swing at the big guys and try to get to the NCAA tournament. I think on the men's side, the next goal with five starters back is let's get to 20 wins. And if you finish in the top five of the WCC, you got a chance to make the postseason and at least the NIT. And I think that those are our goals this year. Shante will tell you, let's win 25 and go to the NCAA tournament. I'm completely on board with that. We've also put a tough schedule in front of him this year with the event at the Moda Center and our conference. But I would be surprised if both teams aren't in the postseason this year.
I love it. One more before I let you go. We see in football, like, Portland State will play payday games in football. I have heard that some colleges will play payday basketball games. Is that a space that you're comfortable operating in?
Oh, we're paddling in that pool with both arms, John. we've bought teams. We regularly buy teams, and we've been bought. We'll go down to Oregon 3 years in a row for that. We'll bring in teams, and Oregon's been great. We partner with Oregon a lot of the time, and we'll bring the same team out to play both of us, because these Eastern teams now with budget crunches, they're not going to come west for one game. But we're right in the middle of the fishbowl, right? The Power Five will buy it.
Believe we lost Scott Lakem there. Judah, do we have him, or is he gone there for a second?
No, he's gone, so we're going to go get him.
We'll go get him back. I was pretty much done with the interview. Let's see if we can grab him back here. Scott, do we have you back? No, he's gone. I'm pretty much done with him. I think we just call him back, tell him we're good on the interview. But I think it's such an important time for the University of Portland. Like, you're looking at basketball. The good side of having no football program is you don't have to share resources with football. The downside is it does put some pressure on men's basketball in particular to be successful. I appreciate Scott Lakem giving us some time and energy and effort there. You got the Bald-Faced Truth statewide. Leave it locked in right here.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Apparently there was a flash of thunder and lightning over Scott Lakem's house in that last segment, and the power went out at his house. That's what caused the phone line to go dead. I hope he's all right. Is he all right, Sean? Or what did he say?
Yeah, he's fine. He's fine. He just apologized. It was really unfortunate.
I'm glad that he didn't get hit by lightning. I wrote today at johncanzano.com. I was really writing about Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban, but I kind of you know, it's one of the things that I really enjoy. By the way, everyone who reads me there, I appreciate that you, if you read me there, you subscribe there. I really appreciate that you're out there, and I'm having a lot of fun with it. I don't know if you can tell. If you're a regular reader, I've had that feedback over and over and over again from people who say, oh, man, you're having fun with this, aren't you? Well, one of the things I did today is I was writing about Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban, and I just sort of went off on a tangent because it's where my mind went. Recruiting has always brought out the best and the worst in coaches. And I've heard some wild and hilarious things over the years when it comes to recruiting. I covered Bobby Knight. I mentioned it in the last segment. I also covered Jerry Tarkanian, who were, they were very different coaches, right? Different styles, opposite ends of the spectrum. If you're too young to remember it, Tark was, you know, all the way to the left side of the spectrum. Knight was all the way to the right side of the spectrum. They both won big. They both found themselves in national championships and Final Fours. But, man, they were different animals. Total, I got whiplash going from Knight to Tark. But Tark told me a story or two one time, and I want to share with you. One time I went to lunch with Tark, and we went to a place that he was frequently dine at. And so no menus were delivered. The server just came over and Tark said, I'll have what I have. And, you know, John will have this. He ordered for me, right? And then we sat there and he just told stories. And I took notes. And he told me a story about Frank Sinatra. When he was at UNLV, Sinatra was in Vegas quite often and Tark knew him well. And Tark was recruiting two Italian kids from New Jersey who were considering UNLV, among other places. So Tark asked Frank Sinatra if he might do him a favor and call the mothers of the recruits. It's true. Looking for an advantage? Is it a violation? By old standards, probably a minor infraction. By today's standards, people would be like, what's the big deal? Name, image, likeness, whatever. But Sinatra made the call, called the moms, sang to the moms on the phone. UNLV did not get either player. And Sinatra went 0 for 2, so to speak, recruiting. But it bothered Tark so much that every time I brought up Sinatra around Tark, and every time after that, because I knew I figured out it bothered him, Tark would begin muttering about how lousy old Blue Eyes was when it mattered. When he needed him most, he wasn't there. Tark also told me a great story about former Connecticut coach Jim Calhoun. You may remember Calhoun, but these are Hall of Fame coaches, Jerry Tarkanian and Jim Calhoun, and they found themselves in pursuit of the same high school recruit, except Tark got bad news. He apparently had terminal cancer. Not really. Calhoun told the recruit Tark had cancer. Now, I thought, as Tark was telling me the story, I was like, oh, Jerry Tarkanian must hate Jim Calhoun. No. It was the opposite. He liked Jim Calhoun. He almost respected that Jim Calhoun lied and said that he had cancer. And Tark in the end said, you know, I didn't get the kid, but I didn't have cancer either, and he would laugh about it. Another occasion, and I was there for this story, Jerry Tarkanian was pitted against Roy Williams for a recruit named Deshaun Stevenson. Peter, do you remember Deshaun Stevenson with the Dallas Mavericks, among other teams? He played for about 8 teams.
Yeah, he was great.
He had a neck tattoo. He was real good defensive player. He was strong. He was, you know, he was really physically imposing and strong for a guard. Really good defensive player. In fact, he played for the Mavericks when they won the title in 2011. He was a bit of a defensive stopper. Rick Carlisle loved him. But Deshaun was living in Fresno. And Deshaun's issue was, you know, Roy Williams was at Kansas at the time. Deshaun needed a 600 SAT score to make him eligible as a freshman. You were not a qualifier if you didn't have a 600. And Deshaun had scored 450 on the SAT. Roy Williams was very worried about this. And in fact, I saw Roy Williams in Fresno a couple of times when I was working there. And in his last-ditch attempt to pass the SAT, or to get a 600 even, Deshaun Stevenson flew across the country and took the test in North Carolina instead of taking it where he had always taken it in California. Now, this, of course, raised suspicions. Everybody went academic fraud right away, like, oh, he's going to have somebody take the test for him, whatnot. But the test score came back, And Deshaun told me he got an 1150. So he went from 450 to 1150. When I told Tarkanian the news, he said, somebody ought to tell Roy Williams that kid should forget basketball. He's a Rhodes Scholar. Now, Deshaun's SAT score was thrown out by the testing board. He then skipped the college experience, entered the NBA draft, and became a first-round pick. Played 13 seasons in the NBA, won that championship I talked about. So, yes, you know, recruiting, it's tense. I think it's even more tense right now because of what we see going on with the transfer portal, and now, you know, the rules are changing, and you can – the booster collectives are involved, but it's the same crap. It's not like Jimbo Fisher is saying Nick Saban's got cancer. He's just having his collective outbid Alabama's. Leave it here. Some parting thoughts coming up.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.